Blog Talk Radio.
Chambea, jala, cabrón, ya no te quedan balas. Chambea, jala, cabrón, ya no te quedan balas. Yo siempre picheo, yo lo otra vez, siempre picheo.
Welcome to the Ed and Fuzz Show. My name is Ed Molina, my partner in crime as usual, Fuzzy Biscuits. I'm excited about this show. Man, I'm excited. That was Chambea by Bad Bunny. I have a soft spot for that song for two reasons. Number one, the pay-per-view that happened this last Saturday. But number two, Brother Will, I know you're familiar with Brother Will. You're very, very well familiar with Brother Will and the problems he brings. But Brother Will, that was the first song he introduced me by the Conejo Malo, by Bad Bunny. And he was one of the first people to put me onto his music because he was like, yo, Ed, I know you're into lyrics. I'm telling you, you got to hear this dude from Puerto Rico. He's also a wrestling fan. And he played Chambea, which featured Ric Flair in the video. Fast forward to this weekend. It's not that just you always put over Pat McAfee. Yo, he's a real fan. He retired early and all this and that. But I'm sorry. This guy, he's a bigger star than McAfee globally. No disrespect to McAfee. He's a singer. He's not a former NFL guy. You know, he's not like Lawrence Taylor. And even someone like Stephen Amell, who's the Green Arrow and did his own stunt. He's none of that. He's a reggaeton singer from the hood. Skinny motherfucker, too, to that. I'm no longer working for who I work for, so I feel I can cuss now again. Sorry. but I think it's safe to say Bad Bunny stole the show.
I mean, I'd agree. I mean, I'll say this. What you were saying about McAfee and everything, I would say Bunny is in a different type of class of celebrity to begin with. And then I would also say that as far as, like, the in-ring, I think it's very close. But there's definitely, you know, argument for Bad Bunny being the best in-ring celebrity. But you're right. As far as class of celebrity, he is the biggest we've ever seen. And then,
it's not even close.
You know, what's that?
It's not even close.
No, I mean he's a global superstar. He just headlined Coachella, you know, stuff like that. And then also it's in his backyard. And then, you know, like I had mentioned off the grid, this crowd, if it were like, you know, just a guy who played professional basketball in Puerto Rico, this place was just going off. This crowd was hot. And to put, like, the biggest star in the world in his, you know, backyard in this hot a crowd, I mean, and that's what I really, really, really thought made this pay-per-view. Beyond, you know, how well he performed in-ring, it was just electric, like, all night. Like I was saying, even, you know, Zelina Vega, just being somebody whose family comes from Puerto Rico, that place was going off. Bunny came out, you saw Bad Bunny's reaction in his pop on SmackDown.
Yes.
You know, it was the crowd was so much hotter than that SmackDown crowd. And Puerto Rico showed out. I mean, you knew Puerto Rico was going to be lit, but I feel like Puerto Rico, the crowd was so hot, it earned way more looks now. It earned maybe like a pay-per-view every year. Such a big, electric crowd. It was, the crowd really made it.
Can I speak on that for a second? This is the other reason I'm excited about today's podcast. I hardly ever get to talk about this aspect of professional wrestling. And I feel like you will appreciate this as a, what is it you call yourself? As a self-proclaimed honorary Boricua, huepa.
Yes.
You know, I think you'll appreciate this. But when I was growing up in Brooklyn, New York, little tiny Ed would watch World Wrestling Council on Univision. It was Puerto Rican wrestling. And this was so much different than what I was watching Saturday mornings on Wrestling Superstars. And I'm sure this is all familiar to you because you're of my era. People that are listening to this from the Attitude Era, you know, this is story time, to put it in our cold sense, so bear with me. So little Ed would watch WWC wrestling, and it didn't have Hulk Hogan, it didn't have the Ultimate Warrior, but it had these Latinos, which again, you know, you're still self-discovered, but it had these Latino stars, people that looked like me. Carlos Colon, TNT, who y'all know as Savio Vega. He's, to me, like, if you love Savio Vega, you're still not a real fan in my eyes unless you know who TNT is, because he was so dope. As polarizing as they are, the Invaders 1 and 2, Hercules Ayala, one of my favorite managers, Latino Bobby Heenan, as I used to call him, Chiqui Star. I love me some Chiqui Star. Just a devilish Puerto Rican always trying to put his guys over. Huracan Castillo. And that's not to mention, my introduction to Ric Flair was through Puerto Rican wrestling because of his feud with Carlos Colon. You know, my introduction
to Flair,
Bruiser Brody.
Puerto Rico too.
I'll get back to that in a second. My introduction to Puerto Rican, to Bruiser Brody was through Puerto Rican wrestling. My introduction to Mr. Pogo and Kendo Nagasaki, which is why Io Shirai got a huge pop. Puerto Rican love violent Japanese wrestling because of Mr. Pogo, who went on to become a legend against Onita in FMW, if you're into the history of hardcore wrestling. But Mr. Pogo got his wrestling roots, his violent wrestling roots in Puerto Rico with the likes of Bruiser Brody, with the likes of Dula the Butcher, with the Sheep Herders. Y'all know them as lovable bushwhackers. Hey, that shit was corny to me because I knew them as the Sheep Herders, one of the baddest, deadliest, bloodiest tag teams that I've ever seen to this day. All this, like, to me, there is no ECW. There is no Philadelphia crowd. Everyone talks about, I'm one of those people that puts Philadelphia as the number one crowd in the U.S. as far as wrestling. You disagree with me, but I think we're close that they're in the top three. And part of that is because of the legacy of ECW. Well, guess what? There is no ECW. There is no violent hardcore without Puerto Rico. And I can go back to the Funks, who also used to wrestle Puerto Rico. Lastly, and I know I've been monopolizing the time, and I apologize for that, because like everyone talks about Mexican wrestling and they deserve their flowers, but I'm glad that the fans showed out the way they did. I'm glad that they were the tributes to the old school, like Carlito, who is Carlos Colon's son. I love Carlito. I always like Caribbean cool. I spit in the face of people that are cool. I love that shit. I love Savio Vega, even though, like, I'm a TNT guy. Like, you know, I love, like, point is, I'm glad that the rich history of Puerto Rican wrestling was so upfront, in your face. Like, that crowd is hotter than anything Philly's ever produced. Any Philly fans want to come at me? Hey, people bleed. I'm with it. I can proverbially defend that. You know what I'm saying? I was so that to me was the exciting part to see, and on top of that, the recreation of the LWO, a much wider LWO that doesn't define Latino world order as Mexican world order, but Latino world order. You know, we may not get along sometimes. We may fight amongst each other, but you know, at the end of the day, there is some love between Mexicano, Boricua, Cano, Ecuatoriano, Hondureño, Boticos, Catrachos, fucking whatever you want to, you know, even Argentinians, I got love for them too. And to see the LW come back, my biggest pet peeve is non-Hispanic people complaining about the rebooting of the LWO. Yo, kiss my ass. Kiss my ass with that. That ain't for you. Get over it. Get over it. And I apologize for the rant. But it was just, to me, that was the most exciting part. And I guess, going back to what you're talking about, I guess what you're saying is the fans stole the show.
I mean, yeah, the crowd sequels, the fans. I'll say this, and in explaining why this was a big pay-per-view that I was excited for myself as a self-proclaimed honorary Puerto Rican, to me, there's three places where you could say that wrestling is cultural. And, I mean, obviously one of them you brought up is Mexico. And then I would say after that you have, like, Japan. This is no – and also, you know, as a – to make it clear, this is not, like, in order. But I'm just saying Mexico.
Yeah.
Then I would say you have Japan. And the third would be Puerto Rico. And let's look at, you know, we could start with Mexico. Mexico is humongous, huge country. Japan, not the hugest country, but a whole lot bigger of an island than Puerto Rico.
Island, so, plural.
Island.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but it's like, I think
area,
people, let's not get
you want to put it. It's a way bigger,
yeah,
like, country, you know, anyway,
yeah,
landmass, whatever you want to say. And you have little Puerto Rico. But little Puerto Rico comes so hard. Like, they are just, it's, to me, it's different than that, like, Japanese crowd, like, that you get in, like, you know, Tokyo Dome.
Sure.
That you would get in, you know, well, that's not even DF anymore. I keep forgetting that. I want to say DF. Mexico City.
Mexico City, yeah. It's habit.
but it's kind of like Puerto Rico, just, that's kind of their spirit to begin with. But it was just, I feel like it was a great look. I were WWE, you know, if I were deciding, you know, where to go, like, Puerto Rico would definitely be a return trip. I thought they did a great job of making Puerto Rico the centerpiece, like you said. We had Starlito. We had Savio Vega come out. You know, don't get mad at me, but
yeah,
I don't think Zelina Vega gets that look against Rhea Ripley for the belts were it not in Puerto Rico. I
That's
wouldn't
it.
Be that excited about that match, but
I'll get back to that in a second.
The response to Zelina Vega, it was huge. You know, then of course you have Bad Bunny headlining, you know, all the different people who just popped up. It was a night for Puerto Rico. I feel like, you know, WWE did a good job of showcasing Puerto Rican wrestling, and Puerto Rico showed out, and they showed that they have a true love showed, like, from the opening match, you know, throughout. Like you said, you know, that's why they love Io Sky. And a lot of people were taken aback in that first match because Io Sky, you know, started out just looking like she was the heavy favorite. But, you know, a lot of people don't talk about, by the end of the match, it definitely felt like Bianca was the favorite. And
won them over. She won them over.
I say that to say, I feel like they had their favorite, but they just wanted to see good wrestling. And,
yeah,
you know, they came out heavily against Io Sky, but once Bianca Belair put on the show she did, they love Bianca Belair. She seemed like she's going to become, you know, one of the favorites down there. They were heavily behind her,
yeah,
by the end of the match.
And that's how you win the crowd
just,
over.
Like
that
I said, it was a great crowd. It was just a crowd there for, you know, pretty much for everything. They had their superstars. They had people of the past. They had WWE doing a good job of marketing it, setting up the card. It was just, to me, Backlash normally is not a pay-per-view that you're going to really check for. You may get a good Backlash every few years. I think this one was the best one I can remember. And let's be real, it was a good card. There were some really good matches. But it really wasn't, you know, if you put it up against other cards in the last few years, I'm not, like, doing backflips, but it was definitely memorable for Backlash. It was a good card. It was a good night of wrestling. Yeah, I mean, I had a good time watching it, and normally, you know, you don't get this warm a feeling about Backlash.
So, you know what, as we always discuss off the grid, you hate it. You know how I hate it, isolating arguments or topics to just a segment or one lane, one view. But putting the crowd aside for a second, putting Bad Bunny aside for a second, and I actually do want to get back to Bad Bunny. Actually, let me ask you a question about Bad Bunny first. There's a lot of people who thought that should have been the main event over Brock and Cody. Do you agree or disagree with that?
Kind of like a two-part question. I would say before the matches unfolded, I would probably think Cody versus Brock would be a good way to end the show. But I would say, in hindsight, I think it should have been Bad Bunny. Just because I don't think either one of the main events was really that incredible. They were both good, but I don't think either one was great. So seeing that they were about the same caliber of match, the crowd was much hotter for Bad Bunny. It's his backyard. I think probably putting Bad Bunny and Damian Priest last probably would have made sense.
And I guess putting the crowd and Bad Bunny aside, who do you think ring-wise, your all biases aside, kind of as objectively as you can, what do you think was the match of the night? Because I've heard people say Bianca Belair and Io probably stole the show. I've heard Bad Bunny, that was the best match. I've heard Brock and Cody should be, you know what I mean? What, from your perspective, which one do you feel, what match do you feel was like that stole the show?
I mean, I honestly think, and I don't necessarily because of the place in the night, I think Bianca and Io Sky. I thought that was the best match of the night. I think it's hard to steal the show opening the show, but if that were possible, they would have been match. And I believe I mentioned.
You're fading away from the mic. You're fading away from the mic. Sorry about that.
I think either offline or last podcast I mentioned, I think this could be match of the night.
Yeah.
It was probably the match I was looking forward to the most, and I think it definitely did not disappoint whatsoever. I think it was perfect for, you know, there's people, I would assume, because I know a friend of the show, Bonnie, a couple people have, you know, given a little inkling that, I'm tired of Bianca, she's had it for a while, blah, blah, blah. I think she got a lot of people back by beating someone like Io Sky, by somebody pushing her and making it such, you know, close a match, such great a match, somebody who can perform aerially better than her. It was just both of them just came with it. It was a great match.
So
it was one of those matches where after, I don't know, after about 10 minutes, you really had no clue. You were like, all right, I have no clue. This could go either way. They both had several, for lack of a better term, finishers that, you know, the other person tapped out in two. Bianca had another ridiculous show of strength when she basically military pressed Io and then just held her up with one arm above her head. It was classic Bianca. It was classic Io. I've been saying since Io, back then Io Shirai, came to the WWE main roster, I've been saying this was the matchup I wanted to see. In War Games, when they were both wrestling, I was like, this is what I want to see. I got to see both of them, full match, and it did not disappoint whatsoever. And to me, easily match of the night.
So to build on what you're saying, I don't think it's that Bianca was boring. I think it's that she ran through the division, and really after Bayley, which we had already seen Bayley versus Bianca, we were kind of in a position where we were recycling the same names without any new stories for Bianca. That makes you stale. That is not on her. That is on creative. I think that's fair to say. I think going back to an earlier point, I'm an Io Shirai stan. I can't say that I go back to her days at Stardom. I'm actually now trying to immerse myself in the world of Stardom because of Mercedes Moné / Sasha Banks. And if we have a little time, I'd love to get your take on that, on her and her current journey, her path. But I've always been a big fan of Io Sky, Io Shirai, however you want to call her, ever since she did the three-way dance with Charlotte Flair and Rhea Ripley. Everyone forgets, yeah, Charlotte Flair defeated Rhea Ripley for the NXT title, but it's not like Rhea got it right back. Io's the one who won it next. I've been big on Io Shirai for a long, long time, and I think for WWE audiences that don't watch NXT, which is surprisingly a lot of people in the WWE universe, it really boggles my mind how they can't even, like, watch their own brands. It was a fresh matchup, with fresh skill sets, fresh moves, fresh face, someone who can really, really go in the ring, and has probably been underused for the most part in the roster, getting that, you know, new blood for that, you know, get a new rivalry, get new, you know, new storytelling, new pacing with Bianca Belair. And so credit to that match. Like, I think now that we've seen the draft and who's in, who from NXT has been elevated, I think we're going to see better matchups for both Bianca and for Rhea. Although Rhea still has some people to go through the roster. I don't know how many of the horsewomen she has gone through yet. I know she beat Charlotte. I think there's right matches there with her with Bayley, her with Becky. I'm not going to – actually, let me rewind because I want to start doing this. I don't want to call them the four horsewomen because they're not friends anymore. I mean, most of them are friends. Some of them not. But I do want to call them the four pillars. Feel that from All Japan and AEW. AEW saw it from All Japan. I think it's safe to say they're the four pillars, the modern-day four pillars of women's wrestling for WWE. And I don't think Rhea's been matched up against her. Anyway, I'll get back to Rhea in a second. But, no, I agree with you. I think Bianca needed new challenges, new faces. I'm weirdly looking forward to Zoe Stark versus Bianca now that Zoe Stark's in Raw. Really, really excited about that matchup. I'm high on Zoe Stark. But going back to what I'm saying, I think Io Sky showed out in a great way, and I hope they're going to separate her away from Damage Control and have Io do Io thing. That's just me. I can't disagree with that. I think the other thing that you mentioned, sticking with the women's division, Rhea Ripley and Zelina Vega, you're absolutely correct. She's never going to get this pop again. She's never going to get this title opportunity or be on the verge or the teasing on the verge of winning for Zelina Vega. But in their defense, they did it right. You get one shot to do that, and they nailed the landing. You know how in gymnastics they say you got to stick the landing? She stuck. I think Zelina Vega stuck the landing. And
oh, she did.
This is more about backstage politics. WWE owed her this. They fired her for having a twitch or speaking up for herself. So she's New Yorkian through and through. She left WWE for Twitch, right?
Can I say something real quick?
Sure, go right ahead.
Just because I feel like this is something you'll appreciate, and I don't want to forget, and I forgot to mention it. Probably,
sure.
I would say possibly biggest pop of the night was during that match, and it was when Zelina Vega pulled out a chancla to beat Rhea Ripley. The place went absolutely insane when she pulled out a chancla. It was like, it was just the most cultural thing ever because, like, everybody in there. On a side note, today I wore my Te Calmas or Te Calmo shirt, and I went to the two Latino suits I have, and I showed them my shirt, and I was like, here's my chancla. They were like, no, like, with genuine fear. I was like, the chancla is a real thing. And this place, when she pulled out the chancla, it went insane. It was almost a bigger pop than when Bad Bunny came out. Like, they went absolutely berserk when she pulled out that chancla.
It's funny, though, like, you know, the cultural differences within us Latinos, and, you know, Puerto Ricans call them chanclas. We Hondurans call them chancletas. I know some Mexicans call them chanclas. I know some Mexicans call them chancletas. But I wonder if your average white like Long Island, not even white actually, or your African American, non-Caribbean, that got the gag, got the gig, you know, got what it was about. I would hope so, but I honestly don't care. This is our thing.
No, I think probably in the pay-per-view audience at home, I would say it went over more heads than they appreciated it. I mean, I know it. So to see the pop that it got when she pulled out the chancla, I was like, oh man, because it really was like it was. I mean, it was almost like, think about like if she had, you know, pulled out like whatever the national treasure Puerto Rico is or something, like they
a
went
coquí.
Nuts, like that was the lost art or something.
She'd have
like
rolled
that.
Out if she'd have
like,
rolled out with coquís.
I don't think it would have gotten as big a pop as the chancla.
No.
Unless
no.
There was like, you know, little coquitos wearing chanclas or something like that. But like I don't think like a bottle of coquí could have, you know, could have gotten the pop that the chancla did.
So, but to your earlier point about, about they owed her this. So they dissed her the first time. They fired it like, yo, it's either Twitch or us. She was making money off Twitch, more money playing video games on Twitch than she was wrestling. That's no brainer. And it's less of taxing and abuse on your body. Of course you're going to go to Twitch. Then they bring her back and literally fire her husband their husband married together, Aleister Black. Aleister Black. What's he going by now? Oh, fuck, what am I blanking? But you know what I'm talking about.
No,
he's
Aleister Black now.
Oh, he's Aleister Black now, yeah. But they fire Aleister Black literally like days after rehiring her, you know. Then they go to Madison Square Garden for Christmas. Her dad was one of the victims of 9/11. I believe he was a firefighter. And, touchy spot. I have a friend who also was a firefighter, passed away in that touchy spot. They kind of promised her to give her a big opportunity at the house show at Madison Square Garden, which isn't your normal house show per se, because they really, really go all out. There's certain house shows, the Starrcade in Charlotte's one of them, the house show in New York, MSG during Christmas, they go all out, and they cut her match out. And throughout it all, she was a company woman. She's like, nope, it's okay. I understand. So to see the company kind of repaying, you knew she wasn't going to win. I mean, you know, especially WWE booking, you're never going to win at home. You might as well lie about where you're from because you're never going to win at home. But seeing her get this opportunity, seeing her patience pay off, I feel like this was the highlight of the career. People were criticizing her for crying. Are you kidding me? I'm okay with that. I get it. I would have preferred not to, but it was such an emotional moment for her, her family being there. Both from New York and Puerto Rico, like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm okay with her having that moment. And shout out, you know, if you have a problem with her crying before the match, fuck you. Really, fuck you. That's just me.
No, I mean, I'm like you. I didn't, you know, it's not like it's really like anything I look forward to. Like, oh yeah, she cried, but like the magnitude of it. And again, the crowd was so like live that like I understand fully how she could be overcome with emotions before and after. You know, especially after. I mean, she got after, you know, she had lost and she was in the ring by herself. I mean, they really like, you know, there were loud chants. There was everything. How you could see, and I'm not even an emotional person. I might be the least emotional person you know, like, and I can understand her being overcome with emotions in the situation. And then, like I said, I hate to keep bringing up the crowd, but the way that crowd popped for it, the way that crowd showed support, the way that crowd was like, we don't care if you weren't born here, you are one of us like anybody else. Like, I can understand how somebody could be like overcome with emotions, and I would never fault her for feeling the moment, because she deserves to feel that moment, and Puerto Rico made her feel that moment, and really, like, like I said, I forgot how much Puerto Rico really accepts their own, no matter where they're from. And the, like, you know, embrace that she got from Puerto Rico, from the crowd, it's completely understandable for her to feel those types of emotions, you know, before, after. She didn't show it during the match. So what's the problem? She got in there. She did her thing. She wasn't emotional during the match. She did her job, and she did a great job. Possibly, you know, a top three match of her career. So, I mean, I didn't hear anybody. You probably have, you know, read more about the event than me.
Yeah,
I,
it's one,
you know,
one internet asshole in general.
Complaining about her crying.
It was one asshole in general who used to be a regular on This Whole Inferno and Conan's podcast. He's a real British wanker, for lack of a better word. He's just a borderline racist wanker that probably got too much light making a big deal of that online. I usually have my problems with right-wingers, but wrestling right-wingers are probably the only people worse than wrestling right-wingers are MMA right-wingers. But I'm not gonna get political there. I do want to get political for 2 seconds, and then I'll move on to the next thing, kind of related to this. But, man, the other reason I'm happy for Puerto Rico is they needed this. I think it's safe to say that since Hurricane Maria, it's not even disrespect. This island's been battered and bruised by Mother Nature. This island's been battered and bruised by the Trump administration. You know, we've talked about the plight of D.C., and we've talked about, you know, off the grid, about them not having statehood and compared it to Puerto Rico's situation. And I think both should be states. It shouldn't be a choice. I think both should be states. Well, we know that will never happen because both vote Democrat. So it'll never happen. But I think Puerto Rico needed this to have a night where all the cool stuff about Puerto Rican wrestling, featuring the biggest global star on the planet right now, who is Puerto Rican, and embracing that with their love for professional wrestling, it was kind of cool to see Puerto Rico in a positive light, in a celebratory light. You know what I mean? And this is an island that's been through a lot, that's been totally disrespected all around. And I'm glad that the WWE, and because this was done in conjunction with the Department of Tourism of Puerto Rico, I'm glad they managed to do this. And I'm with you that I would love to see a yearly show in Puerto Rico. Put them, you know how like UFC has guaranteed MSG always to be on the docket for a pay-per-view? I would love to see Puerto Rico as part of that docket for WWE of we're going to go to Puerto Rico at least once a year. And like I said, it was great to see, you know, Puerto Rico's been shining, pun intended, between Bad Bunny headlining Coachella. I don't think people understand what a big deal that is. I've never watched Coachella. I stayed up at 2 in the morning, treated it like a Japanese pay-per-view, to watch that man perform because representation, orgullo, el Latino orgullo, el orgullo Latino. Sorry, I'm speaking like a tourist right now. But, you know, I'm glad to see this convergence happen of activity for an island that really hasn't had a whole lot, from their failing power grid to, you know, not having SNAP nutrition rights, just, you know, a lot of hunger on that island. Just the disrespect from Trump all around during Hurricane Maria. And so I'm glad to see that this was something very cool, positive, that highlighted the cool shit about Puerto Rico. That said, transition, the competition, the landscape. You have Forbidden Door in Toronto. You have All In at Wembley Stadium. Here's my question to you. We still got about 10 minutes left. Do you think that the success of WWE in Puerto Rico, as well as the success of having Sami Zayn featured in Montreal, his hometown, do you think that puts a lot of pressure on AEW and Tony Khan to go all out, pun intended, in Wembley, and to go all out at New Japan in the Toronto show, at Forbidden Door with New Japan? Do you think there's pressure now on AEW, or do you think they just got to stick to what they know, stick on track, and see how it goes? Where's your take on that?
I would say I don't think I think there's definitely pressure. I don't know if it's coming from Puerto Rico. I think that's definitely added pressure. But I think there was pressure anyway. You know, AEW has been biting at WWE's heels. It's kind of, at least in my opinion, gone back and forth somewhat. You know, AEW had a full head of steam. They kind of lost that head of steam, kind of, you know, coincided with Triple H taking over. But, I mean, I think the difference, as big as AEW has gotten at any point, it's not WWE globally. I think that, again, I don't think necessarily it was created by Puerto Rico. I think it was added to it. I would say Toronto will build it up a little bit, but I think Wembley is the big thing. I've heard they sold 60,000 tickets, and I believe Wembley, if, tell me if I'm wrong, is like 90,000?
It is 90,000.
Believe it. So, I mean, I think they need to show out in Wembley. Not even just draw, you know, close to full. I think it will really say something if they sell it out, however feasible that is. Seeing as they haven't been as big internationally, I don't know if they can fill 90,000. If they can, that would be huge. But they need to actually make this a show of shows. This almost has to be their best card, you know, to date. Not necessarily, but it's got to be a big show. You can't just go and be like, hey, we sold this many at Wembley. It has to be a memorable show, because if it's not, when they go somewhere else, let alone come back to London or anywhere, you know, that's what's going to be in people's minds. They need to get those butts in the seat, you know, not just in England, but all over, by saying, hey, we're not just going to come to your country, but we're going to show out. Forbidden Door, I don't even see it being as good as last year, possibly.
I think it's
going to
be better.
Definitely,
I think it's going to be better.
I don't know. We'll see. Let's say it's twice as good. I still don't think that does as much internationally as this Wembley show. I think it's this Wembley show more than anything, and I don't think that it's Puerto Rico is the cause of it. I think they definitely added pressure, but the pressure was there, because unless you are as big globally as WWE, you're not really competing.
So, because I got like about 5 minutes, I don't want to take up all the time, but to your point, you are correct about 60,000. That is what's being reported, which the number that I felt they needed to hit minimally to make this a success. What do I mean by that? When WWE did SummerSlam, I believe it was in the late 80s, early 90s, it was a British Bulldog versus Bret the Hitman Hart for the Intercontinental title. That's old Wembley Stadium. They drew 60,000. I don't know if they filled it all the way to the top, because Wembley has traditionally been a big stadium, but they did 60. So getting to that benchmark of 60, I think at least as far as a house, there's already some success there for AEW that they managed to do this, because that means it's not going to look empty. And that's the important part. That's step one. You can't have the place look empty. So off the bat, even if they don't sell any more tickets, I think you got something to work with. Obviously, they're going to keep selling tickets and expand, because they sold that many tickets without even having a semblance of an inkling of a card. We don't even suspect what could happen. Like, you know, I do agree with you that this has to be their WrestleMania 1. It has to be. It has to be quality, but it doesn't have to be the best event they've ever done. I understand the pressure to do that, but if you look back to WrestleMania 1, WrestleMania 1 wasn't anywhere near the top 10 best WrestleManias. It was just a spectacle in and of itself of having Liberace, Mr. T. They got to go, you know, all in's got to go all out. All those, these puns are intentional, people. And so, you know, I think the issue with this show is going to be who headlines. See, in my eyes, it has to be MJF. And it can't, it has to be MJF because you have to feature the AEW brand. Where this can go sideways. I want All In to be much like the spirit of the original All In, where you took a little bit of indie talent, you took a little bit of Ring of Honor talent, you took a little bit of New Japan talent, and made this spectacle of a weekend. They have the ability to replicate this again at Wembley. But that said, someone had suggested to me Kenny Omega versus Will Ospreay for the U.S. title. That absolutely cannot be the main event. Is it main event quality? Yes. That absolutely cannot be the main event. You can't have a mid-carder belt from New Japan headline AEW's biggest show. I think we could agree on that, right?
No, I definitely agree. I was about to say the only way is if he were under contract, which he's not going to be under contract at that point, I believe, maybe in like a year. But no, you can't have a guy that's not under contract with your promotion headline Wembley Stadium for your first big international show. No.
It can be a New Japan star. Like, if you give me MJF versus Okada, that's the main event. And Okada would have the job, I would think, in that main event to put over the brand. Now, I don't think Gato will lend Okada to do a job even for MJF or Kenny Omega. Like, I don't think he would do that. That's not smart business for New Japan, who's trying to come back from the pandemic. But you see what I'm saying? Like, it has to be MJF, the star. He has to be your main event. And so now it becomes a difficult part. I don't think we'll get an idea what that main event will look like until after, you know, Double or Nothing just coming up 2 weeks away. We got to do a preview show for that pretty soon, right? And then right after that is Forbidden Door. So I think those two things are going to help set the pace for what could potentially be the main event. I can live with MJF versus Ospreay. Ospreay being the British guy, he's going to get the huge pop. MJF being the bad guy, shitty American, because you know he's going to play right into the shitty American. That sells. But I think, you know, people have said Sting and Goldberg, retirement match, your main event. Boring.
No.
I would love for it to be FTR versus the Bucks, part three, but I don't think that's the one for Wembley. That's a great pay-per-view main event. It's not for Wembley. It has to be MJF. Unless you're going to get the belt off of him in the upcoming weeks in the Four Pillars match. And I don't see that happening.
And
I'm sorry. None of those guys.
I don't think they do.
None of those guys are ready to be champion. Two of those guys have potential to be, just not right now.
No, MJF will have the belt. MJF will have the belt when Wembley comes around.
Well, anyway, we're out of time. We'll do this again next week. We'll talk about Double or Nothing. That's coming up soon. And we'll catch
Champions.
Up on New Japan Pro Wrestling. And Night of Champions. Yeah, absolutely. That's coming up quickly, too. So, anyway, we'll do it again next week. Peace.
Late.